We are joined by a senior writer for Sports Illustrated, co-host of the Crossover Podcast. He is a Sirius XM radio analyst. He also wrote the foreword for The Greatest Show on Earth, a history of the Los Angeles Lakers winning tradition. Good friend of the program. He is Howard Beck. Howard, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Doing well, Romy. How are you?
Good, Howard. Great to visit with you. I want to ask you about this past weekend. I have not spent a lot of time on this. In fact, maybe I was waiting for you to come in to talk about this, but it's still pretty unbelievable that the refs missed that obvious foul committed by Jason Tatum on LeBron James at the end of regulation in Boston. The NBA Refs Association issued a statement, Howard, admitting a mistake was made. My question for you is, then, shouldn't the league be able to do something to fix an egregious error like that when it happens during the game?
I mean, it's a great question, and yeah, like, that was one of the, I don't know if it was one of the stranger versions of this we've had, Jim. The statement from the Referees Association was interesting. I'm not sure if that was necessary. I think in cases like this, it's best to just let the league speak for itself. The referee who missed the call, Eric Lewis, had already done the pool report after the game in which he said, listen, we've seen it now, and yep, we missed it. It happens. I don't know that everybody contorting themselves to try to apologize or say it's anguishing them and we're sleepless nights. I don't know what that accomplishes, and it comes off as a little overwrought, to be honest. The league's so Monty McCutcheon, who's head of officiating for the NBA, did a great interview with my colleague Chris Mannix, which people can find on SI.com, in which Monty addressed this and referee operations in general, and, you know, even the ideas as Mannix posed to him, should this be something that could be reviewed? The league is walking this fine line, Jim, and has been for years, ever since they started instituting and then expanding replay. They walk this fine line with, on the one hand, wanting to get everything right, and perfection is impossible. There is no world in which every NBA call or non-call will be correct. There is no 100%. You're just trying to get as close as you can. But that pursuit of perfection has led to this massive grid of triggers for replays, which they've tried to kind of cut down in recent years, and they've eliminated some things with out-of-bounds plays. It's automatic replays, because what happens is you end up extending the game, and nobody likes sitting through replays. No one, and especially when in the last few minutes of a game, if it goes, you know, review after review after review, that kills momentum, it kills fan interest, it drives people nuts. So you have to balance, on the one hand, this striving for an impossible standard of perfection versus how long the game might be and how many stoppages, I can't even say it, that you're going to have. So they're in a tough spot. And it's to the league's credit. They've always been transparent, and especially during the Adam Silver era with the last two-minute reports. I know people have mixed feelings about them, but the move to transparency and the move for accountability is, you know, it is welcome, and I think that's a positive. People can sit there at the end of it and say, yeah, well, all the apologies and transparency in the world doesn't change the fact that if you're a Laker fan, you feel like they got screwed that night, and okay, but I don't know that there is some solution for this, Jim. Maybe every single play that happens at the buzzer has to automatically be reviewed. I don't know. And as Monty McCutcheon said, that's for the competition committee to discuss. But, you know, by and large, the league will tell you, and obviously they're not going to provide us the data, but they will tell you that, you know, by and large, referees get the vast majority of their calls correct. And sometimes the mistakes that do happen, happen at a critical time like this. And, you know, human error has always been part of the game. And I would just add this one last thing, and I say this to every fan base of, you know, or anybody who's aggrieved at a given time by a call. If your team had done something better in the other, you know, 47 minutes of the game, if it was a game that's that tight, you had all these other opportunities. Like, it's never just about the one call. And yes, that's the one that sticks because it happened at the end, but you know what? Play better, make more, you know, get more stops, do other things, build a better roster, Lakers. How about that?
How about that? Do better, play better. Howard Beck joining us. All right, to that point, Howard, in terms of the Lakers building a better roster, you got the trade deadline coming up a week from today. What are you hearing about Russell Westbrook? And beyond the Lakers, what teams do you think might be active in the trade market before the deadline?
The Westbrook thing has kind of gotten quiet, right? Like, that was all the rage last summer and early in the season, was Westbrook plus the two future picks that they have available to trade. What can that get you? And the Lakers didn't want to move on some of those opportunities. We know that, you know, there was a very vigorous discussion with the Pacers in the offseason about the Heald-Turner thing. That is obviously off the table now with Miles Turner signing that extension. Is there still some other configuration that could work? I haven't heard anything recently that suggests that they're aggressively trying to go that route. They have been, as you know, very protective of those two future first-round picks because clearly they feel like they want to guard against falling off a cliff down the road when LeBron retires. But, you know, the 2027 and 2029 picks that the Lakers have that everybody talks about packaging with Westbrook and his salary, those aren't the only picks they have. They do have other picks. Those are just the only two that are eligible to be traded right now until after this June's draft. And it has to do with a whole bunch of rules and trades that they made in the past, but they will have other picks. So it's not as though their entire future is tied up in these two picks. And it feels like they're hoarding them as if they think that's the case. Quick aside, the Lakers have never built their dynasties through the draft anyway. Even the pick that was Kobe Bryant was a pick they, you know, that they traded for his draft rights. They've usually done their work in trades and free agency, not through the draft, but that's neither here nor there. I would think they're at least listening to or exploring the possibility of something involving Westbrook and at least one of those picks, or if both, then maybe heavily, not heavily protected, but, you know, seriously protected. They've shown enough with LeBron and Anthony Davis healthy that they can actually, you know, be a force still in the West, but they can't do it with the roster they have. And the Rui Hachimura trade was a nice little deal, but it's not moving the needle. And I come back to this, which I wrote about in December. Are they going to squander another year of LeBron's late prime? How many more years can he do it at this level?
Fair. Howard Beck joining us, and he is doing it at a really high level as he tries to run down Kareem. Howard, what about Chicago? There's been reports of friction within that locker room as they've underachieved all season long. You've got trade speculation surrounding Zach LaVine. What do you see Chicago doing next week?
So they're in a really interesting position because it wasn't that long ago that they were going all in on the present and making that deal for Vucevic and everything else. Lonzo Ball, who, of course, that has not worked out because of injury, getting Alex Caruso. Like, everything was about trying to win the present, maximize what they can do, getting DeMar DeRozan, all this stuff. But they've kind of already maxed out. Like, this is a first-round-and-out team at best, and the question is, are they ready to reckon with that and pivot the other direction? If they are, then they could do the trade that I suggested on SI.com today when we had a little roundtable on trades we'd like to see. And the one I suggested was Zach LaVine and Goran Dragic to make salaries work for Westbrook and the two picks with some sort of protections on them, I'm sure. Zach LaVine with the Lakers, I think, would thrive, and certainly the Lakers could use another creator and scorer on the court. On the Bulls side of it, you know, as I say, I think they've maxed out with this group. LaVine's got, you know, 4 years and 100-something million coming after this season. So this would free up cap room. This would get them some picks for the future. It's a logical thing for you and I to discuss that, hey, maybe the Bulls should pivot and look to the future. It's a lot harder when you're the executive in charge and you've got to deal with the downside of that, which is, you know, people, you got to sell season tickets. You got a marketing department. You've got a pick that you sent to the Magic that I think is top four protected, but that the Magic are going to get because of the Vooch trade. And, you know, you don't want to get, you know, sink too far in the standing. Like, they're just, it's a really tough spot they're in. But I got to think that there is a moment of reckoning coming.
I was going to say, Howard, I actually love that. Of course, I'm not accountable to any of it, but I like that deal a lot myself, especially for L.A. Howard Beck joining us. So let me ask you this before you go. The Celtics dropped 79 on the Nets in the first half last night, and they blew Brooklyn out by 43. In fairness, Kevin Durant and Ben Simmons both sat out with injuries, but the amount of scoring from Boston was no aberration, right? It seems like every single night somebody is going off with huge numbers. Luka has already posted 4 50-point games this year. There's a lot of three-pointers being taken, I understand that, but his defense in the NBA also at an all-time low right now?
Is defense in the NBA at an all-time low?
Yes.
So, you know, it's interesting, Jim. Isaiah Thomas tweeted something, the Hall of Fame Isaiah Thomas, not the younger one, tweeted something to that effect a couple weeks ago where he said, if everybody is scoring this well and it's this historic and great and blah, 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 then basically the converse is also true that, like, that must mean defense is worse than ever. And I kind of chuckled and I thought that, you know, there's something maybe to that, but I think it's – I think it's too simplified. I think that what we're actually seeing is, you know, and this has been increasing over the last 5 to 10 years. We are in a 3-point era. We are in a high tempo era. We are also in an era where players are being empowered or given license to control every possession, whether you're Luka Doncic or Giannis, Westbrook when he was in his prime, James Harden. Of course, we've seen this version of this. Seth Partnow, writer and former analytics guy for the Bucks, has called heliocentrism. It's about getting your one guy who's best with the ball in his hands the most possessions possible. So we see usage rates that Michael Jordan almost never had, that Kobe Bryant never had. And so it's a stylistic thing more than anything, that guys are scoring individual highs and crossing 40, 50 points routinely. In terms of the total, you know, or points per possession, a lot of that is that the game is spaced out and the floor is wide open, and you can't guard everybody all the time when everybody is now a three-point shooter and there's more threes than ever. So I don't think it means the defense is down. I just think the game is harder to defend right now. You know, people can superimpose their own impressions on that in terms of their taste for the game and whether they like this version of the game. But I don't think it's quite that defense is that bad. I think it's just where the game is.
I'm not going to push back on that. Like, people make the mistake sometimes in thinking that if I or anybody else pose a question, that I must therefore believe it. You actually give a very reasonable explanation for that. I'm not going to push back on any of that. I think it's part and parcel of a lot of different things, but I think that's a really good explanation as to why that is. He's a senior writer for Sports Illustrated, co-host of the Crossover Podcast, Sirius XM radio analyst, and again, he did write the forward for The Greatest Show on Earth, A History of the LA Lakers Winning Tradition. He is Howard Beck. Howard, great to have you, man. Thanks so much.
Appreciate you, Romy. Thanks.
Appreciate you, Howard. Great job as always. Howard Beck.